What's happening, everybody? Welcome to a Friday edition of Texans All Access from the Hyundai Texans Radio Studio. John Harris, your host for a beautiful, beautiful evening. Hopefully you've gotten out today or you're going out tonight and experiencing why you moved to Houston. This weather is gorgeous. A little later in the show, we will have the gorgeous man himself, Andy Kalu, a little Texans OGs with Anthony Hill. Looking forward to that. But kicking off the show, it's the gorgeous voice of one Mark Vandermeer. Good evening, Mark. How are you?
Yeah, better off heard and not seen, Johnny. That's how I position it. That's how I promote myself. And yeah, ND is, he's the gorgeous man. He'll have Andre Johnson on Texans OGs next week. So wait for that to drop. That's going to be awesome to get his reaction to all these signings. I want to hear what he has to say about Diggs. And maybe he peeked at the new uniforms. I'm not sure, but those are coming out soon enough. Draft week. So let's get fired up.
You know, the one thing that I don't want to talk about.
Uniforms.
And that's uniforms. So
place pickers, uniforms. Wait, what
now,
else?
And is the roof open? Is the roof open?
And the roof open. Yeah. Gotcha.
Is the roof open?
Closed today, by the way. Just saw it closed.
It was closed. Didn't matter today because Texans weren't playing today, but yeah, they were laying down the field in the bowl, and that was kind of nice to see. Just see the green grass in there. Start thinking about the 2024 season already. Being that it's a Friday and a lot of things have happened, I thought, why not have a sizzle fire Friday? So if you know how this goes, I hit Mark with maybe a hot take, maybe a completely cold take. Mark's gonna rank and rate what hot take I give to him, and then explain why he feels that way. So I have just a blank statement, and Mark's going to say five sizzle fires. That is, it's the hottest take possible. No way. Just totally crazy. One sizzle fire, it's totally true, and that's right. The way it's going to go.
Right.
Anywhere that's, from one to five.
It's kind of an oxymoron here because the hot take, the hotter the take, the more outlandish the
right.
Is. Some people don't get that. I'm just trying to explain it for right. The listening audience so they can enjoy the bit.
Yes. Okay.
Okay.
So here we go. So I've got seven of them right now, and there'll probably be another one that'll pop up as we go through. Okay. Number one, the Texans have the best wide receiver trio in the NFL right now with Tank Dell, Nico Collins, and Stephon Diggs.
Ooh, that's you know, that's not as hot as you might think. I'd give it 2 3/4 sizzle fires.
Okay, all right,
Maybe I'll throttle back on that because it's certainly one of them. And those who don't know, was it the morning guys? Gosh, I get confused listening to all the shows sometimes. It's just later confusion because I'm trying to remember where I heard it. But they were quoting somebody else saying, they weren't even talking about Tank Dell. They didn't mention Tank Dell. Oh, no, maybe that was a last year thing. Because anybody who knows anything has to mention Tank Dell with this receiver group. I mean, how could you not, right?
Yes, right.
But I think with this trio of receivers, the top three guys, as you would project, to say they're the best trio in the NFL cannot be that much of a stretch. When you have a 1,300-yard guy in Nico, you have an 1,100-plus-yard guy, a guy who had 127 catches or whatever it was. Was it 127?
107 for Diggs.
107. It was 27 more than Nico. Nico had 80. Yeah. Couldn't have been 127, but Diggs had close to that, if not that, in the 2020 year. Anyway, it's not that much of a stretch to say that. I don't know if they're ready to officially claim that. I think when the Bengals had their top three going, and you could talk about the 49ers perhaps, but the 49ers pass catching group has to include Kittle and McCaffrey. And we can go there with Mixon and Schultz, but you weren't going there. You were saying receivers. So I'm going to say 2 3/4 sizzle fires.
I like that. Now, CBS Sports did an article yesterday. I don't know who wrote this. They did the top 12. Garrett Podell. Going on. He came up with the top 12 wide receiver trios in the NFL. Number one, Texans. Ooh. Number two, Dolphins. Tyreek, Jalen, Braxton Berrios. It's a stretch. Number three, Bengals. Jamar Chase, T. Higgins, Trent Irwin. Irwin's very sneaky. I mean, he made plays against us, and he makes a lot of plays in games. 49ers are fourth with Ayuk, Debo, and Juwan Jennings. I think Juwan Jennings is completely underrated. Number five. Now, I think this one could rise a little bit if they get more out of Devontae Parker, the Eagles. A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, Devontae Parker.
That's huge.
Yeah. How about this number six, the Bears? DJ Moore, Keenan Allen, Tyler Scott. Now, that's a stretch. little
Scott
bit.
Scott makes it a stretch.
It's a stretch. The Tampa Bay Buccaneers could be a good one coming up. Evans, Godwin, Trey Palmer. Seahawks are 8, Metcalf, Lockett, Jackson, Smith, and Jigba. I would have thought that one had been a little bit higher. I mean, no. Metcalf had 66 catches, 1,100 yards, 8 touchdowns. Lockett had nearly 80 for 894 and 5. And Jackson, Smith, and Jigba had 63 for 628 and 4. I mean, that should have been higher. Vikings, Jefferson, Addison, Sherfield, 10, Cup, Nacua, Atwell, the Rams. Number 11, the Cowboys, CeeDee Lamb, Brandon Cooks, Jalen Tolbert. And number 12, the Tennessee Titans, Hopkins, Ridley, and Burks. So, yeah, I think 2.25 is probably – that's probably pretty good. That's probably
When we were on with McClain last night, I wanted to bring up the Titans trio because Burks makes it interesting if Burks can rise to the level that they wanted when they drafted him.
Right.
But he hasn't quite done that yet, has he? Mm-mm. So they're not there yet. I think with healthy people, the Texans can lay that claim. And I didn't give it that many sizzle fires. I gave it a few.
Yeah.
Because it just feels really sort of beautifully uncomfortable to say.
I'm
listening to people called the Super Bowl contenders. I'm thinking, okay, I guess we are. You have to look at it that way because look around you. Who else is a Super Bowl contender? And you have to feel like they fit in well with the group.
So I was on with my guys, Chad Hastings and Jeff Ketchum, on their House Divided show on Orange Bloods yesterday. And so a few of the listeners were chiming in and, you know, saying that, you know, about, you know, Texans being a Super Bowl contender, they shouldn't be in the same sentence. That's a joke, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, they were like, Chad and Jeff, your guest, you know, he's just blowing up the Texans. And I said, hey, look, the one thing you'll never hear from me, never, you'll never hear from me, the Texans are a Super Bowl contender. Never. I will never, you know, bang my chest in the offseason and go, hey, the Texans are a Super Bowl contender. Now, week 5, they're 4-0 and they're going to a big game and they win that big game. I might say, yeah, this might be something we need to think about. I will never sit there and tell you they're a Super Bowl contender. Because how do we know? How do we know? Last year, now I thought we were better than 31st in the power rankings, but that's where a lot of people thought we were going to be. So I'll never tell you that. There are a lot of people talking about it, and it is really interesting. Okay, number 2 on a sizzle fire Friday, staying with the receiver theme. No Texans receiver will have more than 85 catches in 2024.
All right, so Nico had 80 last year, and it was his best season by far. It was a monster season and great yards per catch. We know that Diggs had more than that.
He had 108?
So you're thinking they spread the ball around, nobody blows up more than 85. I'm going to say, all right, so this is not more likely to happen or something like that. This is sizzle fires. I'll say that's about 3. Maybe a shade under 3. 2.9 sizzle fires.
Okay. That's what I was kind of thinking. It was like 3. It's kind of right in the middle because I could see the ball. And again, I should have said no Texans pass catcher. But you brought it up earlier. Mixon, Schultz, you've got to factor them in. You got to factor Brev in.
Yep.
You know, those guys are going to, you know, get a number of catches. So could you have where 2 of them get 80 but not more than 85? You know, one of them gets 70. And then the others get 35 to 50 somewhere in there? Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, I think 3 is probably right in the middle because I think the initial reaction is, oh, no, somebody's going over 85. Somebody's going over 85. In a way, Mark, I don't know that I want somebody to go over 85.
Yeah,
because that probably means you're chucking the ball and you're behind in games when you don't need to be.
Yeah.
So I kind of don't want anybody to be over 85. But if they're all kind of in that range – I think I'd be really, really happy with that for sure.
Yeah, it's not going to be about volume of catches. It's about big plays, scoring plays, spreading the ball around. And remember wanting to run the football better?
Mm-hmm.
They ran it well once Devin Singletary got in there, but they want to run it even better, I would think. And we'll talk to Bobby about this. But the proof is going to be when they take the field and you see what the game plans actually are. They've got so much firepower. Okay, go on.
Okay. So that was 2.9 sizzle fires. Number 3. However, there will be 2 Texans pass catchers with 10 touchdowns or more each. As a frame of reference, Diggs had 8 last year in Buffalo. Nico had 8. Tank had 7, and Tank only played, I think, 12 games. And I can't remember. I think Dalton had 6. There will be 2 pass catchers with 10 touchdown catches or more each.
That's 4.5 sizzle fires right there.
Wow. Well,
based on what you just said, look, C.J. Stroud's going to spread the ball around.
True.
If you have more, 2 guys with more than 10 TDs apiece, you've probably had some blowout wins, which I'd love to see, by the way.
Yeah.
Reduce some of the stress of some of the victories. I love the drama, but, you know, we need some blowout wins here. So maybe you get a few of those, and that adds up to the possibility that you're presenting. Mm-hmm. But I still think that it's unlikely to happen that you get 2 over 10 TD catches each. It's not going to happen. You could have 8, 7, mix in a 5 or 6, but he also has rushing touchdowns and be a hell of an offense. You could be the best offense in the league and not make that come true with the 10 receiving TDs apiece. So yeah. I'm going to take 4.5 sizzle fires. Hot take.
Yeah, as you go back, and I just looked at those 12 teams that with the top trios, there are only a handful of receivers that got to 10. Mike Evans got to 10. Tyreek got to 10.
It's hard.
Jordan Addison got to 10, even though Justin Jefferson only got to 5. So that was kind of interesting. Okay, I tend to agree with you with that one. I think 10 TDs is very, very difficult to get to.
And we know the Hall of Famer, Andre Johnson, has never had 10.
Never had 10. Yep. Yeah. Never had 10. Okay, number 4. After the acquisitions of Calvin Ridley and Legarius Sneed, amongst others, the Tennessee Titans are now the scariest opponent in the AFC South. Rate the sizzle fires.
5, maximum sizzle fire volume. There is no chance that the Tennessee Titans, with a new head coach, after firing Mike Vrabel, after not looking like they have a real solid plan, there's no way they're the scariest team in the AFC South. That is the farthest fetchest thing you've said.
Okay.
I'll squeeze that out somehow.
Okay.
Am I right? You have Will Levis at quarterback. Let's just stop right there. Will Levis is your quarterback. Is Will Levis going to be better? Yeah, probably. I would hope for their sake. Is Will Levis going to be a 10-game winner at quarterback? Yep. No chance. No Derrick Henry. You have Pollard running the football. You have Spears running the football. No way. I love Hop. You know that. Ridley's good. But, man, Jacksonville had trouble getting Ridley to play consistently. And they have a solid set in place when you look at quarterback, running back, coaching staff. They were coming back from a division championship. They couldn't get it to work the way they needed to with Ridley. It's not going to happen in Tennessee.
Here's the other thing that stands in the way. These 5 men, Nicholas Petit-Ferrer, Peter Skoronski, Lloyd Cushenberry, Daniel Brunskill, and Dylan Radunz. Now, I expect the Titans to make some changes to that offensive line, but you take a guy or two out of that lineup, what are you putting in? You're putting in rookies that are going to face Danielle Hunter, Will Anderson Jr., Danico Autry, you know, my Jay Sanders, and whomever else. So that's going to be a tough nut for that group to crack. So, yeah, I think their trio of receivers is good, but look, there's no Danico Autry on the team anymore. There's no Azeez Al-Shaair. Those are 2 of my favorite players. Now they're on the Texans. Now, there is a Legarius Sneed, but I don't think Legarius is going to make up for everything that's going to happen with that team on defense. There's no Kevin Byard. He was a guy that kept it all together. Take Byard out of there. You know, look, Amani Hooker's fine. They're trying to make Elijah Molden a safety, and he got us last year with that pick 6, but, you know, he's really a nickel corner. So I think that offensive line is still an issue. I don't know that they've got hosses up front other than Jeffrey Simmons that really kind of scare you. You know, Harold Landry is back healthy, you know, 2 years after the Achilles or the knee injury I think he had. So I just don't see it. And I mean, linebacker wise, don't even get me started. I don't even know if they've got linebackers that are going to be able to stop us if we get rolling. So they didn't get Kenneth Murray, but Kenneth Murray was not great with the Chargers, and the Chargers needed linebackers, so they let him go. So that should tell you something. Okay.
I'm celebrating with Tennessee losing Derrick Henry. I know that they have not had winning seasons the last 2 years, but it's not Henry's fault. Do not blame Derrick Henry for their misfortunes on defense, on the inability to throw the ball effectively, despite the fact that everybody's swarming on Derrick Henry, and he's still averaging over 4 yards per carry. They should have done better with what they had. They didn't.
okay, which team would it be that would reduce the sizzle fires from five down to one or two? Would it be the Colts or the Jaguars?
I think the Colts. I think the Colts are scarier than the Jaguars right now. Not that I don't respect the Jags and I don't think that they're going to be good. Right. I think the Jags are going to be an 8-9 win team at the very least again. I think they have that in them. There's no doubt. They have those clubs in their bag, like you would say. Mm-hmm. But the Colts are scarier because they came from, quote, out of nowhere to potentially win a division title or at least a playoff appearance if they were able to beat the Texans that last game. They were very close in that game. They had Gardner Minshew playing the whole season, basically. With Anthony Richardson's X factor and high ceiling, you don't know what to expect here. They have Jonathan Taylor. They've got great guys up front on defense. This could be a very frightening team. If we're sitting here next year and the Texans are a wild card and the Colts won the division, obviously that's a disappointment based on the expectations for the Texans. But I don't think anybody should be surprised if the Colts have a very good year.
I agree with you. Absolutely. I would say Colts as well. Okay, next one. Again, rate the sizzle fires for this hot take. The Texans will draft defensive tackle and defensive tackle in the second round of the NFL draft. They will double up on the big guys on Friday night at the draft party. Rate the sizzle fires, Mark.
4.3 sizzle fires.
Ooh,
not
okay.
Going to happen. They're not going back-to-back D-tackle. It's not going to happen. Has it ever happened at one position? Yes, it has. With offensive line, top of the third round at 06.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Charles Spencer, Eric Winston. Yep.
Yeah, I could probably come up with another time or two if I really dug deep. But I'm going to say it's not going to happen this year. First of all, even if there is a DT in one of those spots, let's say Nick goes DT at 42. Yep. Now he's sitting there at 59. There's going to be another position on the board that attracts him. He's going to move up or down based on what he likes, what's available. As we said, the likelihood of him sticking at 42 and 59, less than 50%, right? Less than 50% that Nick Caserio stays in those spots. He's got the trigger finger on trades, and he's going to pull it. He's going to make a move, and it's not going to be for a defensive tackle. Not for a second defensive tackle if he likes the first one. If he drafts a DT with 42, that means he likes the guy an awful lot. He's going to like somebody else after that. Some other position group player is going to come along, and he's going to go ahead and snatch that guy.
4.3. Okay. Let me see if I can lower the sizzle fires with this one. All right. That being said, at a minimum, the Texans will go defense in the second round of the draft.
That's a one sizzle fire because I could see a corner and a DT.
Yeah. Yeah.
Look, that would apparently be the chalk. Mm-hmm. But as we say this, look at them draft a wide receiver. They're going to do something that you're not expecting. Tight end, you know, it'll be something like that. They've done that as, you know, historically anyway, when you look at the volume of drafts they've had. Now, Nick is different. We know that Nick is different. You have to study the Caserio drafts and where he's likely to go. You know, he's likely to move that pick. And I would say that has low sizzle fire appeal because, it's not likely, but that's really plausible that they could go defense.
Yeah, after yesterday's news, and, you know, not really going to get into the whole contract thing, it gets kind of complicated when you start doing it on radio with Stephon Diggs and all that kind of stuff. But netting it all out, essentially, Stephon Diggs is in Houston for this year and guaranteed to be here for this year. I had already been thinking about this. I didn't make this a sizzle fire, so I'm just going to ask you this question, Mark. I'll lead you into it. I have thought, even after the Stephon Diggs trade, I still felt like, you know what? Yeah, maybe the priority for receivers moved down a little bit. When I saw yesterday's news, I kind of felt like, you know what? I'm not ruling receiver out, especially in a draft that is this heavy with stud receivers, that I could see pick 59 or 86 being a wide receiver or one that Nick makes a trade somewhere in that group, that at our draft party on Friday night, there's going to be a wide receiver taken in one of those picks. I just had this inkling that when you have this group of Lamborghinis over there and you have an opportunity to get one, you're going to get one. Yeah. And even if that doesn't work this year, maybe it's a pick that develops down the road. I use this example all the time. How many games did Travis Kelce play as a rookie in Kansas City?
Tell me.
Half. He played half a game, missed the entire season, came back the second year in 2014, and he started his Hall of Fame career at that point. So you can part of it for Kelsey was he was injured, but still, you could take a young receiver, watch him grow, watch him move, let him compete, and who knows what happens, especially when you've got a group that's this good and you have somebody that's kind of unique. I still think that wide receiver is not outside the realm of possibility on night two on Friday night.
It would be somebody who's really great who dropped for whatever reason.
Or an elite trait. You know, guy runs, he's a big dude, or he's a 4.3 guy, something like that. But there's Returner, an elite trait.
I'm still going to be surprised if that happens. I know that Diggs is very possibly a one-year type of situation, but you're still going to have Dell next year. You're still going to have next year. Maybe you're sitting here this part of the offseason and you're making another Diggs type deal for somebody else. Maybe you re-sign Diggs. We'll see.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe it's a running back. Would you feel better if I said running back?
I think running back is certainly a possibility. It has to be, again, it has to be the right guy, of course. You could say that about all the picks. The player that's going to fit. But I wouldn't be surprised. They need running backs, period. We've talked about this. The running back room needs fortification. They need undrafted free agents or drafted players or veterans. They need players in that running backs room. And we've seen it in camp. You're loaded at running back, or as far as volume goes, and then 3 days later, three guys get hurt, and all of a sudden you're running the fullback as a one in practice.
Right. That's exactly right. That's a great point. Okay. You mentioned his name a little earlier. Saw him in the hallway today. He had a big old smile on his face, and I can, imagine why. General manager, executive vice president of football ops, Nick Caserio and the Texans will make at least six trades on draft weekend. As a reference point, last year he made eight trades.
Yeah.
Eight.
Yeah. So this is very low sizzle fire. In fact, I think six is a pretty good number. If we're sitting here in Vegas, we're at one of the books, what should we put the number of Caserio trades at? I feel like six is good. If you went under that, you definitely go over.
Yeah.
You go over that, you're thinking, is it really going to be that many this year? So I think six is a good number. So low sizzle fire count, one sizzle fire.
Yeah, all offseason last year, including pre-draft trades for Shaq Mason, trading away Brandon Cooks. I think that was two plus the eight. He made 10 trades. I think my favorite trade that he made was obviously the Will Anderson trade. I mean, how could you not? But the Texans traded for Shaq Mason, and they traded to the Buccaneers a sixth-round pick, and they also got a seventh-round pick back. So they got Shaq Mason, and they got a seventh-round pick back. Well, that pick ended up being traded to Buffalo so that the Texans could go get Xavier Hutchinson. And the pick that was used was that six-round pick or whatever the Texans got in that deal. The Buffalo Bills then selected with that pick Nick Broeker, who they then waived at the end of training camp, who then became a Houston Texan. So you follow all that.
Yeah.
That's the kind of fun part of all these trades is like tracking, like, oh, my gosh, what happened here? How these trades go? Man, the Packers made a deal last year where they were sitting at number 45. They traded down to number 50 in two different deals. Got him down to number 50. They ended up with Jaden Reed, Dontavian Wicks, Carl Brooks. Five spots. They got three bona fide players last year as rookies. So that was the Packers. Nick obviously was able to do eight trades. I'm with you. I felt like I was not mailing it in on that last one. I was trying to come up with the number. The number I put first was four. And then wait a second. That number was a lot higher last year. And I went, one, two, three. He made eight last year. Eight. And he had nine picks. He has nine picks this year. I think he had like 10 or 11 last year. So I think six is probably right at it. So that's probably a one. You're probably right about that. All right, Mark. Good job with the sizzle fires. And now we turn it over to our guy, the gorgeous one, ND Kalutz, Texans OGs. We got Anthony Hill, former Texans tight end, coming up next right here on Texans All Access. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to this Friday edition of Texans All Access. From the Hyundai Texans Radio Studio, it's time to go to Texans OGs. the man himself, Andy Kalou, hooked up with Anthony Hill, former Texans tight end. This great stuff. Take a listen.
A good friend of mine that I just missed playing with, as he's a young buck. He's a young OG, drafted in 2009, and that's the year that I called it quits, or my body called it quits. But that's when he got his NFL career started. But luckily for me, I've had a chance to really get to know this brother over the years, and we have some like interests, both business owners, which we'll discuss later in the show. But my man, Anthony Hill, sitting in for the OG podcast. What's going on, Anthony?
What's going on, Indy? I appreciate you for having me here, man.
I appreciate you coming in because I know how busy you are, not just raising a young king, your young son, but also running a company and all the things that you got going on. So we'll discuss that, but definitely appreciate you coming in. Now, I've had a bunch of friends, because it's a common name, named Anthony, and more than half of them, their nickname is Ant. But you standing 6'6", 270 plus pounds. Did they ever call you Ant growing up?
They called me Ant Hill. They called me A Hill, and called me Lil A. That was when I was raised. My main name was Lil A because my dad's name was Anthony.
Now your dad, may his soul rest in peace. I know he's no longer with us here. Was he a big guy in stature like you?
He was about 6'3", mm-hmm. where I'm about 6'5", 6'6". And so I was always bigger than him. So I was the one that was like, hey, you're going to start calling me Big A now instead of Lil A.
And I bet that never happened.
Never. Absolutely never got any traction.
I bet that never happened. You know what? Let's get into it, because you're from the – you know, this is another question. We just have fun here, OG Podcast. Okay. We don't get too technical, two former players just chopping it up, as I like to say. Now, you're from – Houston / surrounding areas. Yes. I grew up in San Antonio. I fell in love with Houston when I first visited Rice University, and I knew this was going to be home. Mm-hmm. I want to ask you, because we have this debate sometimes. Oh. If you're not from Houston proper, when you leave, do you claim Houston? And what I mean by that, where did you officially grow up? I already know the answer to this.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So I'm originally from Dickinson. That's where my whole family is. Mm-hmm. Dickinson, Texas. I went to school in Friendswood. I went to high school at Clearbrook High School. When I left mm-hmm. and went to NC State, yes, I claimed Houston.
Okay. And it makes sense, because somebody from outside of Texas might not know Friendswood.
Exactly. Yeah, that was the main thing. Nobody knows where Dickinson or Friendswood is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and being in college, I think a lot of guys will hear Friendswood. Oh, you from Friendlywood. You're from whatever. It's like, oh, no, man, I'm from Friendswood.
They're going to test your gangster on the field. Like, right, right. Friendswood, that don't sound hard. Because I know guys, and again, it's a fun argument, who are from Katy, but when they leave, they say Houston.
Yes.
But then people who are truly from Houston, I'm talking about inside the 610 loop, Sunnyside, right. South Union, they're like, mm-hmm. nah, you can't claim Houston.
Right, so, 100%.
Yeah, but 100%. When guys like you are claiming Houston outside of the state, it's only a good thing for the city. So how'd you go from Friendswood to Hargrave Military Academy, mm-hmm. which is in Virginia, to mm-hmm. North Carolina? Like, that took you all over.
Definitely. It was definitely a wake up call. I was here in Houston. I was going to Clearbrook. Had a good friend of mine, a childhood friend of mine, that went to NC State as well, and also went to Hargrave.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so, I mean, when you go to Hargrave, you go to Hargrave for two different reasons. You either go for, you need to make up some grades, or you need to get some higher test scores, or whatever that case may be, or you want a second look.
Mm.
You want a second look. You want people to see you in a bigger light, because it's a very well-known football school as well. My buddy told me that he thought it was a great idea. Hargrave had, like, I believe the year that I was there, we had 95% of the athletes went Division I football. I thought it was a great opportunity to show that I was better than what I had showed.
You're listening to Texans OG Podcast, Andy Kalou and Anthony Hill. Andy, take it away.
Let me ask you this, because for 95%, and I don't think people realize how high of a number that is to go D1,
right.
do you have to be accepted to go there? Because it sounds like you can't just walk off the street and go to Hargrave.
Yes, yes. You have to be accepted there. Actually, I was accepted verbally, declined with a letter, and, you know, I praise God for my mother. She actually called the chairman, and she said, hey, you know, I know you sent this letter. I see your signature on the bottom of it, you know, and she gave him a scripture, and she said, I'd ask for you to reopen my case, basically that I was going there. She told the chairman, yes, you know, I will be going there, and 7 days later, we got a letter that said you have been accepted.
That's true.
It was unreal.
Like, did she say, "Hey, your word is supposed to be your bond" type deal? Was that part of the conversation?
There's a scripture, and I know the scripture. But there is a scripture that she recited to him. Mm. You know, she gave him a scripture out of the Bible, and she told him that I was going, and told him to reopen my file, please. And he reopened it, and literally 7 days later. I was getting an acceptance letter saying you have been accepted.
Amen.
Now.
Amen.
Yeah, right. Now, little did I know that going there, first off, it was all boys school.
Mm-hmm.
It was in the middle of nowhere. One of our things that we did outside, we go and run around in the cow fields.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, there was nothing to do. There was one McDonald's. But I will say it taught so much discipline. The discipline and, you know, everything that Hargrave instilled into me helped me out to be a better man in the long run. Yeah.
You know, when I'm raising two boys, you have a young son.
Yes.
And when I think of military school, when I think about that experience, just forget football. Like, are there things that you learned there or experienced there that you carried into manhood?
Definitely. Oh, man, definitely, definitely. So first off, you wake up to a horn at about 5 a.m. every morning.
Wow.
You wake up and you have to brush your teeth, wash your face, make your bed, get dressed, and be downstairs in your battalion group. So I believe our battalion was, we were the golf company. We were golf company, and then you have to report, and you have to say that, you know, everyone's accounted for, and then you have to march to breakfast. So
are you in uniform?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
You're in a full on uniform. You're in a uniform. You have to march. I mean, left, right. You know, if you get in trouble or anything like that, you got to march the bull ring for hours. It may be like a 30 by 30 by 30 square, and you have to march that bull ring. And we'd be in like dress shoes. I mean, we were sharp, but you know, it was a heck of an experience. And I think the biggest thing that I can take into manhood is the level of discipline that was there. And just, you know, hey, look, you know, you have to get up, you have to go, you have to make your bed, you gotta, you know, you have to get up and do these things as a man. And so going in, it was very, very tough. Yeah, absolutely. I will say that it was very tough. We did 3 days. We had to hike up a hill to go to practice. It was like a half a mile to a mile. But it just became easy. Mm-hmm. And so the things that are tough now are still easy because it's like, you know, nobody went through the stuff that I've been through, you know. And so, yeah. So that's one of the biggest things that I take into that.
You listen to Texas OG Podcast with ND Kalu and former Texas tight end Anthony Hill.
Man, I got so many questions and comments off that. Like, that's such. So let me just start with my comment. I know this will never happen, and it may seem somewhat controversial. Every boy in America should have to spend a year doing something similar.
Definitely.
Especially in today. And again, it's a pipe dream, but every boy, I mean, I'm saying boy pre-adulthood, should spend a year doing that, and I think they would appreciate the comforts of life a little more.
In the long run, of course. Yeah. In the long run, I mean, there's no phones. There's no, you know, you use a payphone. You got to have your hair cut, shave. You got to be clean. I mean, it's everything. It's discipline at its finest.
Were there times where you're like, this isn't for me?
So you asked the question earlier. I don't know if I answered. Yeah. Well, I did. yes, you have to be accepted, mm-hmm. but you mm-hmm. still have to pay some sort of amount. And so we didn't necessarily have that type of money. And so we did still find a way to pay it. Hmm. So I knew there was no walking away. There was no walking away. My mom was my mom would have probably no way. So really quitting wasn't an option. And so
yeah. Did a lot of guys quit?
Yes. We had a lot of guys quit. We had a guy, he was the number one defensive tackle in the nation. He quit after 2 days. We had a lot of guys that quit, but yeah, it just wasn't an option for me.
So this particular guy, we won't say his name.
Yeah.
Did you ever follow to see whatever happened to him?
Like, yeah, nothing.
Okay. And I'm not yeah. laughing at him.
Definitely. Yeah, no. But I mean, that's the thing. You know, I think sometimes quitting can be contagious as well. Mm. Where you know, if you allow yourself to quit, you know, I think you'll quit again and you'll quit again and you'll quit again.
To Texas OG Podcast with Indy Kalu and his guest, former Texans tight end Anthony Hill.
That's strong. That's strong what you said. Quitting can be contagious. So with that being said, then you go on to have obviously a great career at NC State, or you're not going in the fourth round to the NFL. So we'll assume you took care of business there. As a guy who went through that and then you went to NC State, what do you think about the current state of college football where the portal and people always – and I think they're a little bit incorrect, and I know they indirectly affect each other, in my opinion. People always use the portal and NIL like in the same breath, and I'm like, yeah, it's two different things. But mm-hmm. I get people hit the portal due to NIL. So with all my rambling going on, with a guy who stuck through a very tough year just mm-hmm. to get to college, which right. isn't easy, especially you know when you played, not today's college football, I just want your thoughts on the current state of college football and the transfer portal.
It's tough. You know, I for someone that didn't have the option to just go to another school, just because back then the rules were you had to sit a year out. Yeah. If you were in conference, I believe it was 2 years you had to sit out. I think the biggest part to me is what's fair. What's fair to the kids, because those are the kids on the field, those are the kids that are grinding day in and day out. Not saying that the coaches don't do anything, because I think having a great coach is essential. But my only, you know, the thing that I go back and forth on is just what is fair and what's not fair. Me personally, I wish they could post date from back when me and you were playing yeah. and say, hey, look, you know, you guys deserve a check yeah. as well. But I think as far as the portal, that's a tough thing because it's hard to see that kids are committed mm-hmm. or they aren't committed. On the flip side of it, I think coaches have been doing it for years and years and years. You know, coaches, they go from, you know, within the conference and they leave today and they're getting a signing bonus tomorrow. So just a quick story. So I remember my last game that I played with NC State. Me and my buddy Andre Brown, we were sitting in the end zone before the game, and we were just kneeling and we were looking into the stands because we knew that this was our last home game. And I was just like pointing out how many of my jerseys that I saw. Mm-hmm. You know, and I was like, man, look at all of your jerseys. Look at all of my jerseys. And I mean, it was thousands of jerseys that were in the stands.
Yeah.
And I was saying to myself, well, hold up. You know, I was like, man, you know, I went to the bookstore and I'm like, these jerseys are $85 each. And some of them are even more than that. And I was like, man, I wish, you know, I wish that I was able to get some of those funds. You know, I wish I could make, you know, even if it were a percentage, mm-hmm. you know. And so I don't necessarily agree with it, but I don't not agree with it.
Right.
You know, I think that it'll continue to get better as the years go on and go on and go on. Yeah.
It's like they created this monster because I was all about, you know, free capitalism. I'm all for it. That's the American dream. But when I see kids go from one school to another just to collect the bag, it doesn't feel like it's college athletics, but mm-hmm. who am I to say this young man who's honed this skill and he's worked this gift shouldn't get paid for it.
Right.
But I believe it's the problem we see now because of the story you just told. Mm-hmm. If at that time they had something in place where if somebody's buying an Anthony Hill jersey, mm-hmm. he absolutely, even if it's 10% of the sales, yeah. should get a piece of it. If or, and I don't know, you're probably too young to remember this, the UNLV basketball team back in the 80s when I was young, mm-hmm. Stacey Augman, Larry Johnson, I mean, they were, when I was a kid watching TV, like they were stars mm-hmm. and they were in college, just their style of play. And it was against the rule for them with their entrepreneurial spirit to create t-shirts and sell them mm-hmm. for themselves. Like it was mm-hmm. against the rules,
right. yeah.
but yet they're walking in the malls, not school bookstore, the malls, but they're seeing people profiting off t-shirts with their likeness. With their likeness on
crazy.
It. Like, so I feel like they created that issue, and I don't want to get too deep down
right.
this, but
it's
cool to hear a story like you actually experienced it. Mm-hmm. Like, hold on. At first, you're like, oh, that's cool. That's my jersey. Then you're like, hold on. My pockets got lint in them.
Right.
And the bookstore's selling these for $85.
Right. I am struggling.
Yeah.
We are struggling in college. I have no extra money, no anything. And I'm like, I see thousands of my jerseys up here. You know, just
So hopefully they get it right.
Yeah, but I think they'll get it right eventually.
They'll have to because some of the stories that I'm hearing, it's just not sustainable. All right. Well, what is sustainable? The Houston Texans and their success under our boy D'Amico Ryan. Mm-hmm. Just kind of talk about, you know, what you've seen and you know, some of the experiences you've had now that we're watching this organization literally turn around.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's awesome. I think D'Amico, I know when I played, I know D'Amico was always a leader. Mm-hmm. He was always a headstrong guy. He wasn't a follower. I knew that I could actually cling to him a little bit more. I personally remember him inviting me to church before and like, hey man, hey look, you know, it's off season, y'all wanna go to church? I'm like, what is he talking about? You know, which I was going to church then, but I was like, no one else in the locker room is speaking
right.
like that. At least consistently as he was. And then on the field, he was such a great player. So I mean, he seems so easy to want to play for,
mm-hmm.
and it seems like that the guys today, they just want to play for him. You know that, you know, they want to make him happy, and he is jumping up and down as if he was currently playing. You know, he looks like he could still play, honestly.
Right, right.
I have nothing but great things, great feelings. Whenever he came back, just him being a real person, him being personal, him actually approaching all of the former players and saying, hey, you know, is there something that I can do to help you guys out? Or is there something that you guys want to do? You know, anything that you guys have in mind? I just thought that was just amazing. And so just looking at the organization now and just like, man, you know, he just came in and lit this fire. And it just seems like the fans are just so excited, and you know, I mean, we're in the West Club during the game, you know. And I mean, it's just everyone's high fiving and going crazy, and you know, I think that's just a trickle down effect of how impactful he is, and how he brings it to the players, and then the players, it goes through the players to the fans, and it's just, you know, throughout the whole city of Houston, you know, and just to all of the fans, you know, it's just insane.
It is definitely insane. Man, it was great stuff with Anthony Hill. You want to hear the full podcast, Texans OG podcast, go to our podcast page where you're going to get In the Lab, you're going to get Vandermeer's View, you get Texas OGs, you get all of our all-access shows. Check it out right there at our podcast page, HoustonTexas.com. Check out all the great stuff we got going up there as well. We get back to go around the NFL. What happened on a Friday? Anything that could impact the Texans? You never know. You never know, so we'll hit it next right here on Texans All Access. We got one final segment of this Friday edition of Texans All Access from the Hyundai Texans Radio Studio. I'm your host, John Harris, football analyst, sideline reporter, and looking forward to a full weekend with my draft guide. Yes, that's what I will be doing all weekend, watching the Final Four, maybe going to get my favorite sourdough bread and my favorite place, Angela's Oven, over here in the Heights. So I'll probably do a few of that, but I am draft guide all the way through. So if you want to check that out when I'm done with it, footballtakeover.com, you'll love it. It's going to be jam-packed with information on draft prospects, but I'm different from other draft analyst, because I'll give you the NFL side of it as well. What teams should be looking for, what are their needs, etc., etc. So put all of that together in a draft guide. It's going to be sweet and worth your money. So footballtakeover.com, make sure you check that out. Some news in the NFL. Probably the biggest news comes out of Carolina, where, and this was kind of floating out there a little bit when the Texans started free agency. Hey, should the Texans look at Derek Brown with the Panthers? And yeah, it's probably going to cost, and then it's probably going to cost, if you know what I mean. Well, the Panthers decided to give Derek Brown a 4-year, $96 million extension. 4 years, $96 million extension. I said this last year. I feel like we are in the midst of some of the greatest defensive interior players as a group as we've seen. Now, Aaron Donald steps away and retires, but you're talking about Chris Jones in Kansas City, Dexter Lawrence with the Giants, Jeffrey Simmons in Tennessee. You're talking about the two guys in Washington, Jonathan Allen, Daron Payne. Those guys, I mean, Javon Hargrave with the 49ers. It just goes on and on and on, and Derek Brown is definitely one of those. Man, Quinnen Williams, I missed, Justin Madubuike. It's as good a defensive interior group as I've ever seen in the NFL. And last year, we got to see all of them. We saw Simmons and then Payne and Williams. Payne and Allen. Then we saw Dexter Lawrence. Then we saw Fletcher Cox. Thankfully, he has moved out and retired. But then we saw Javon Hargrave on a Thursday night. He had 3 sacks of Davis Mills. So, Derek Brown, 4 years, $96 million. The Panthers see him in that class. And I honestly, I don't know that I would argue with that at all. I did, for a brief minute, think about what Derek Brown would look like in this defense. But 4 years, $96 million, I mean, obviously, look at what the Texans have paid money-wise throughout. They've paid some guys some money. I mean, Danielle Hunter got paid and a few others have gotten paid, but they didn't pay exorbitant amounts to, you know, players coming from other organizations. It was fair and good money for Danielle Hunter, Joe Mixon, etc. But, and they did right by Stephon Diggs, but 4 years, 96, it's a tough pill to swallow. So Derek Brown stays with the Panthers and we'll see what he's able to do. All right. Appreciate you guys being a part of the show. Thank you so much to Mark, to Anthony Hill, who was with our guy Andy Kalu. All of you guys for listening. Y'all have a tremendous weekend. We'll be back on Monday at 6 with anything that happens over the weekend and more Texans talk. We'll see you then, everybody. And as always, go Texans.